Welcome back to Noise Avocation Podcast. I'm Ryan here with Jeremy.
Yo, yo.
So we recorded this episode like a while ago, and I'm just stating that because there's a couple times where we mentioned things that were out in like late February, and it is now, what is it, April? Yeah.
April 10th?
April 10th at the time of writing this, and then whatever the date is, 15th when when you're hearing us now, so... It was a little bit, but we have been doing a ton of interviews all year, and we kind of got backed up with some stuff, so we've been trying to get everything out in a timely fashion. Before we get into anything, we have a YouTuber here by the name of his channel's Ground Zero Salem, but his name himself is Pat. And we just get into talking about records, music, his YouTube channel, that sort of thing.
Super smart dude, man. Knows a lot about underground music, extreme metal, extreme anything. I mean, he's very intelligent, does his research, doesn't feed you any bullshit. So follow his channel on YouTube, Ground Zero Salem.
Yeah, he was definitely fun to talk to. And I'd had, like, listening back when I was editing, I had fun just talking in general. Like, it was almost like he was like a third host
exactly,
almost on the show.
Exactly. I love that.
As always, shop Blast Beats Vinyl. Check out the link in our episode description. Use our promo code NOISE for 10% off your first order. They are every week putting out new stuff, and we're always telling you that, so hopefully you've checked it out by now.
Get a discount.
But, Jeremy, unless you have anything else?
I'm good.
Enjoy.
Ready when you are.
All right, so, Pat, thanks for jumping on the show, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, first and foremost, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I just woke up, like I was saying pre the intro. I work nights, so I do try to get only like 4 hours of sleep or 5 hours of sleep on Fridays, which sounds terrible, but I have to reset myself for family dude stuff on the weekends and sleep like a normal person. So
yeah.
I set an alarm, obviously. I probably would have slept till 4 or 5, but I'm not really even groggy. I got my coffee. I'm good. I'm pretty good.
What are you, are you like a midnight to 8 a.m. type of night shift person, or what's your night shift schedule?
So I work 4/10s Monday through Thursday.
Okay.
And I work from 9 till 7-ish.
That's not too
bad.
Dude,
4/10s is the way to go.
Yeah, because you get the Friday, like you always get like a 3-day weekend basically. Yeah. But if you work nights, then your Sundays are always mixed up. They seem not like a Sunday.
Yeah. I used to do 3/12s before I moved. Same kind of deal. Like it was like 6:30 p.m. to 7 a.m. And it was great at first. I was like, yeah, I have like 4-day weekends every week. And then as I got older, I got like no sleep, and I worked at 12, and it was insane. And so that's a little bit much, but 4/10s, it's right in the sweet spot. It's good.
Did you find yourself like sleeping more on like, oh, you get 4 days off, and then you sleep like two of them to like,
yeah, I was gonna say your 4-day weekend is really three, because the first day, bare minimum, you're like, that's your sleep.
Not really. I mean, my body's adjusted to it at this point. I mean, I'm giving my, I don't know, I'm not going to be doing this forever. Like I'm maybe another, who knows how long before I figure something else out. But yeah, I'll probably eventually go to days, but I mean, I'm so used to the, okay, get up. All right. Have some coffee. It's weird because on Fridays I'll be up for like maybe only 5 or 6 hours, and then I'll go right back to bed, like no later than midnight, and then wake up normally on the weekend. So I kind of catch up with sleep in that way.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So are you able to listen to music and stuff at your job?
Yeah. That's a big part of like why I do what I do, why I work the hours I do. I have this autonomy of working by myself and having my Bluetooth speaker and, you know, jamming all my new stuff. I have like a pathological approach to my music hoarding and music acquisition. I buy a lot of CDs these days, and I still buy vinyl. Don't get me wrong. I buy plenty of vinyl, but I get a lot of CDs and I rip them to a Dropbox cloud. And then I stream them through like a cloud player. I have an Android phone. So I'll get a bunch of new new acquisitions, rip them, and then jam them all at work. And it's pretty nice. It's pretty nice. It's a good time.
Yeah, it's a good time to clear that stuff. Because when I worked midnights, like, it was the same scenario. Like, it was me and one other guy, and you just have headphones in. So it gave me a lot of time to, I'm like, okay, I want this, 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 and this. I'm going to check out these, you know, 8 records tonight. And then next night, same thing. And you find what sticks. Sometimes you're listening to things for a week at a time if you really, really like it or whatever. And then it's good to unfold all that shit, though, like, because sometimes during the day you have too many distractions.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's and I find that, like, I make dinner most of the times during the week. I find that cooking while listening to music is a great way to absorb music, or at least for me it is. Yeah. And I'm a traditionalist. Like, I have to have like a boombox, like, that plays CDs and tapes in the kitchen. I've always had a kitchen jam box, like, growing up and everything. So I have that, and I usually play something new while I'm doing my cooking and everything.
Casey
as well.
Kasem, man, that's how we roll.
My stereo is like right. Well, one of my stereos is like right on the other side of my kitchen. So I just play CDs through that. But I remember growing up, we had one of those things that, like, mount underneath your cupboards that had 2 little speakers and CD player and a radio.
Awesome. Absolutely. I want to get one of those now. Shit.
Yeah, they are nice for a kitchen, so you don't have to keep shit on your counter.
True, true.
So how do you go about discovering new music? Like, what appeals to you? What do you look for? Sometimes people just look at album covers and they're like, this looks sweet, this looks sweet. I'm going to check that out and this out.
I mean, I occasionally watch other people that do what I do. I don't do it as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. Because there's a whole community of metal YouTubers that do collection updates and talk about what they like. I'm also in a group chat with a bunch of my friends that have been doing this. Oh God, we've had this group chat going now for like 7 years or so. And we'll recommend each other stuff. I mean, there's a couple of labels and distros that I also follow pretty closely. I mean, like, death metal stuff, like Head Split and Caligari, like tape labels like that. Social media, you know, I'm friends with and follow like the Matt, the Dark Descent guy and stuff. And so I usually have a pretty good idea of what's coming out. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, as far as punk stuff, I get a lot of email updates from Sorry State Records here in Raleigh. And they always have a really good newsletter of like, hey, here's the new stuff we got in. This is what it sounds like. Like, I don't know who does the ad copy or whatever for that record store, but they're very, very good, like music journalist level good with talking about like all the new stuff they got in. They're just a super passionate bunch of people. So I'm always like, okay, that sounds good. That sounds good. So that's more or less where I stay on top of stuff. But I mean, there's new stuff coming out all the time. And a lot of times I'm always kind of overwhelmed. It just seems like there's an exponential amount of music that I like dropping all the time. And I'm like, what even is all this stuff? Like, and occasionally I'll throw on like Axe to Grind or Demo Listen or a podcast that talks about new hardcore. And I'm like, damn, I don't know any of this shit at all.
Dude, it's the same rabbit hole though. Like, it's every day something's dropping and it's good. But it's and like you just said, like, I know we both get overwhelmed to the point of like, you got to pick and choose, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. There's just so much coming out for every micro genre, you know? So it's a lot. And I got a little bit burnt for a while, like on new death metal, just because there's so many weird, there's always every couple of years, there's a new sound and it seems to be one or two old school bands. That's like an entire genre now. Like, now it seems like it's Autopsy, which I'm completely cool with. But it, you know, for years it was Entombed and then it was Incantation. And I'm like, there's too many bands that sound like this that don't really have much originality. They're all really good. Cause you have to be good as hell at your instruments. To
right.
Play this
like
stuff.
Technically,
but like, I'm like, it all is starting to sound, and also a lot of it kind of has more modern production, which I think takes the life out of music like that. So yeah. I had to kind of step away for a little bit, and I go into a lot of like finding old stuff that I've never heard before, especially again with death metal. Cause in the 90s, there was an obscene amount of bands doing that type of music. And there's still like, I'm still unearthing stuff from that decade that I was like, I had no idea this existed, or discovering stuff from countries that really up until this point, you didn't really see that stuff even in America, or you didn't hear about it at all because of the internet. It's like Russian death metal I've been checking out more of lately and stuff like that.
Which is like better than anything in America. It's so nuts. Like,
dude, it's so good.
All the stuff that just like, I like a random country, you know, like Japanese hardcore. That shit is awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds just like anything hard from New York.
It's amazing, like, how big of a hardcore following there is over there, though, because a lot of times when you'll be on Discogs trying to find, like, you know, old, like, Cold as Life or old Negative Approach or Earth Mover or whatever, and, like, you find a copy, it's in Japan every time.
Yeah, it's so weird.
I'm like, how the fuck did this stuff get over there?
Yeah, I find that very frustrating about Discogs, because I'm like, this is an American band that was from, like, one state away, and there's two sellers in the U.S. and
they want an astronomical amount for it.
The prices aren't great, and then like 15 people in Europe have this CD, and it's only like €8, but the shipping's €30, so it's like
fuck it.
And like the risk of it being damaged by the time it gets to you, to travel that far, especially for records. Like CDs are a little better because they're kind of in their own protective case. You know, you get a cracked case, it's not the end of the world. You can swap it out, but you get a bent record, cracked record, and, you know, shit like that. Like that screws up the whole process for you.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So you said that you've been leaning more towards CDs lately. Is that because of like the cost of records, or just because a lot of the stuff that you're looking for as far as like 90s obscure metal things were pretty much CD at that point?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about CDs, there's a lot of advantages. I mean, and it's interesting because it seems like Zoomers are getting really into CDs. It might be another revival, like a format revival this time with CDs. There's been talk about that, but I mean,
it's gotta have its time eventually.
Right. I mean, part of it's cost, although that is changing because I noticed with a lot of like 90s hardcore and metallic hardcore and a lot of that, you know, pre eyeliner, really good screamo, like Gravity Records kind of screamo and stuff that I've been super into lately.
Expensive.
It's getting there, but it wasn't when I started checking it out. Like I remember like 4 years ago, I went on a big jag where I was like, oh, I want to get into the band Heroin and I don't know, like Mohinder.
Like how you got to say the band.
Yeah. always use that qualifier.
I want to get into Heroin.
Mohinder and all that stuff. And like all these, nobody wanted CDs. So all these CDs were like $6. Lately, I've been checking out this kind of stuff again, and like stuff like Guyana Punchline and here and there and Inhumanity and all these bands that were around in the late 90s. And I mean, you know, it's not astronomical. It's not too much more than what CDs went for back then, but it's like $15 to $20 for a discography CD kind of deal, you know? So it is going back up, but I mean, you'll go through metal distros and they'll have like all these cool reissues of all these 90s bands and demo compilations, and they're cheap. They're like $5 to $12. So yeah, that's a big consideration. Newer stuff, like vinyl takes up a lot of space. And I just find that like, if it's a newer band, it'll have to be a really, really important record and a really, really good record where I'm like, okay, I'm going to spend the almost $30 on vinyl and give it that space on my shelf. Like otherwise tapes and CDs are fine for me when it comes to new stuff. So it's here or there. It is funny because like years and years ago, even out of print CDs in metal were like insane, like really, really expensive. Cause one of the first really expensive ones I bought before it got reissued by the Crypt was Deteriorates Rotting in Hell, which is a great death metal record that came out on a defunct label, JL America. And I remember going on Amazon and seeing that it was like $35 and being like, man, I really want that. I had that when I was a kid, and actually getting an Amazon credit card because it gave me like $50 in credit or whatever for signing up, so I could buy that CD. And that was a mistake because Amazon is poison when it comes to like, oh, I can have anything I want, including like tons of cool music at my door the next day.
They're the devil.
Yeah. I've actually, I pride myself in this. I have not ordered a single album or CD off Amazon ever.
You're a stronger man than I.
Yeah, Ben. I can't.
I've ordered lots of books from there, but not CDs and records. Records especially, because they don't, they're packaging everything in there. It's not like it's just a record distro where they're packaging media. Like, you know, you got the same guy that just put in a pair of house slippers and a, you know, case of Monster or whatever's throwing in your record in there too. And it's like, they're just whipping it on a conveyor belt and stuff. And it's just not handled right.
Yeah, you always got to roll the dice if you're buying an LP. I don't really buy. I bought one recently just because it was so cheap, and I've been on a big like discovering the Locust for the first time because I hated that band when they came out. Now I'm like, oh, they were brilliant. I need everything. But it was like the Plague Soundscapes LP, and it came out on a subsidiary of Epitaph, so it was on Amazon for $20. And I was like, sweet, I'll get that. I got some other stuff to get this week. I got that and like a health supplement that I was taking, like a conjugated linoleic acid, like, you know, a bottle of pills, like thrown together in a gigantic box.
Yeah.
Like the LP was in its own little mailer, but it was like, you know, very thin mailer just thrown in this huge box with like vitamins, basically. I'm like, oh, cool. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I've heard like horror stories of people that ordered stuff and like they'll try to fold it in half to like shove it in your mailbox or something. And I'm like, dude, how'd you not hear that big crack when you just split that record in half? But
yeah, and I mean, those poor freaking drivers, dude, they're just so overburdened with you know, like all the exposés and shit about how they can't even take bathroom breaks because they have to piss in bottles because they have to make their metrics or whatever the hell. Like, that sucks. You know, even, I mean, not them, just them either. Our mailbox got driven over by a FedEx guy that was like rushed for time the other day. So shout out to drivers everywhere.
Yeah, just drive over. That happens once in a while with plow trucks here.
I had the best mailman, and he fucking retired like 3 months ago. And now they're all like younger kids, and they don't respect the vinyl either.
Yeah, so like, I gotta we watch have them. At the record store here, we have a sign on the door because we have a State Farm next door, and we're like, you know, kind of cool with them. So we open at 11. And sometimes the mail gets here beforehand. So I put a sign on the door that was like, if we are not here, leave the package at State Farm. So the shit's not sitting out front before we get here. The other day I pulled up, I watched the mail guy read the sign and then set the record in front of the store. I was like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah. People. There's been so many federal cuts to the USPS and stuff. And it's definitely not how it was. Even 10 years ago, I think, in terms of like, hey, I'm a federal employee, like I have to take this seriously. I have a pension. I make decent money. I don't know what the ins and outs of that are, but
right.
there's been so much snipped from that like the job just doesn't mean what it used to. I mean, I could be wrong on that, but it definitely feels that way. So.
I definitely can see that around here, actually, that you say that.
So for records, if you, like you said, a lot of the stuff that you're buying newer is on tape or CD. So for records, are you like a original press hunter type of person?
I'm not, but I mean, I definitely kind of salivate a little bit and get tempted by stuff that's like not insane. Like I'd never spend, I mean, my cap is like maybe $100-$150, and it has to be something like really classic that I'm like, oh.
Right.
You know, and I don't really do that on eBay or wherever too much. It's mostly like impulse buying at stores.
Yeah, it gets you every time.
When I see it, I'm lucky enough where I started really, I mean, I've been collecting, buying records since I was a kid in the 90s. And I had to buy vinyl because that was the only format available for hardcore. And, you know, I'd be like, oh, Conviction, the Conviction 7-inch. Do you have this on CD? No. You know,
so I've been buying much. Back, you know, like, to do that.
Back when it was the cheapest thing for hardcore bands to put out 7-inches, other than dubbing tapes, you know. But I mean, I started really going like, okay, like this is stuff that I want to own on vinyl and have like a decent copy of. I'm not a snob about pressings, really. As long as the repress is a decent repress, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me, but I'm lucky enough. What I was going to say is I'm lucky enough that I have most of the stuff I want on vinyl. That's like my classic records of all time. Like I have, you know, the first three Sick of It All records on vinyl. I have a couple of Septic Death records. I have all the Sepultura I want on vinyl, all the Napalm Death, like all the stuff that's like the building blocks of my musical taste. I pretty much have on one format or another, but the real classic stuff I have on vinyl. And I have a lot of early pressings and original pressings because it was before the labels came back around and were like, oh, we got to repress this stuff. Like a lot of the Earache stuff I have is from a time when they hadn't started doing all the represses yet. So I remember, and that was like one of the first big expensive like things I bought. I think it was $40. I got like an original press of Forest Equilibrium by Cathedral, and I was like, I finally have this
for $40.
What's that?
$40, man. That's like so cheap.
Yeah, but I mean, at the time, God. I was
At the time, it was probably like damn, $40.
Yeah, I was pretty broke at the time too. I was like I was in X-ray school, and I was like, I wasn't making a ton of money. I was working a retail job and that kind of thing. And it was a big deal for me to get that. And I think I got an earlier press of like Utopia Banished by Napalm Death, and I was like, I have this on vinyl, like, you know, super excited.
I always ask record collectors this question if they collect black metal, but do you have a copy of Dissection Storm of the Lights Bane?
I have that on CD. I have both the first two on CD, and they, I think they both are like double CDs that have bonus stuff.
Yep.
I'm not the biggest. I mean, I do like a lot of black metal, don't get me wrong. As compared to like how nutso I am about death metal, I'm pretty picky with black metal, and a lot of the black metal that I do really like kind of leans more towards like the South American. Some wouldn't even say it's black metal, the kind of proto black metal kind of stuff from Brazil and Chile and stuff. I don't know
what's actually like the defining factor for black metal anymore, because I see a lot of stuff that's listed as black metal that I'm like, is it though? Like, or what makes the difference to decipher it being black metal now?
It's tough. It's a tough call, you know, because there's been so many bands that kind of bridge the gap between the two. I mean, and there's been so many bands that there's like the Black Death stuff. There's all that Bestial stuff, like Blasphemy, where, I mean, if you played it to somebody who was a layman, you know, a villager, and you were like, oh, that person, if they had the familiarity at all, they'd be like, oh, this sounds more like death metal or grindcore, you know?
Right.
It's, you know, it's considered black metal. So I think a lot of it has to do with, I mean, from my friends that I've talked to that are super into black metal, I mean, it seems to be more of a, like a, an atmosphere or an overall feeling that it gives you of unholiness or what the fuck ever. I don't know. Like a lot of people talk about, like, you know, well, Show No Mercy by Slayer's very black metal in spirit, at least. And like Merciful Fate is a big one that a lot of people quote, and that kind of stuff, like Hellhammer or Celtic Frost. And I mean, that tends to be,
I think they definitely like helped influence it, but I don't really consider them to be black metal.
Yeah. I think the dividing line is Bathory, of course.
Right.
Hellhammer.
Yeah. Hellhammer, Bathory would be the dividing line there.
And I do like the icy Scandinavian, Swedish, and Norwegian stuff.
Yeah, that's the shit that I like, is the atmospheric sounding, like Immortals at the Heart of Winter, and like more recently, like Stormkeep, Tales of Other Time, and you know, stuff like that. I like the atmospheric kind of icy cold sound to it. And I like some of the lo-fi stuff too, but if I was going to go to black metal, it'd be the icy, chilling Moonlight Sorcery, that sort of shit.
Yeah, I like a lot of that stuff too. I've been more into that the past couple of years. Obtained Enslavement was a really good, I believe, Norwegian band that kind of got reissued, and there's like renewed interest in them. But they're very symphonic and stuff like that. Of course, Emperor. You know, there's a lot of it. I've been really into that band Mork lately. I just had a lot of trouble getting around the name for years because
Mork and Mindy.
Yeah, all I could think of was Robin Williams. I believe it's Swedish or Norwegian, some Scandinavian language for dark, you know, like that. But they're really, really great. I just bought like three of their CDs. They're awesome.
I've seen the band name a bunch of times. I don't remember if I've actually listened to them or not. But I always ask that dissection question because that record is like $400 now.
Oh yeah, nah. I think the most expensive or the most valuable, at least metal record that I own, last time I checked, is I have an original pressing of Demigod's Slumber of the Sullen Eyes.
Okay, what's that going for?
It's over $400 now. Nice. I think last I checked on Discogs. I think the most expensive not that you asked. The most expensive hardcore record.
I want to know anyways, so keep going.
I think I have a Fist record, original pressing of Don't Forget the Struggle, Don't Forget the Streets.
Damn.
I think that's around $150-$200. I'm not sure though.
Like a Caroline one?
No, it was originally on a label called Fist Records.
Oh, it's okay. I gotcha. It's like the first fucking issued one.
Yeah, yeah.
Damn.
And I mean, again, that came from a time where it was like, you know, it was like late 2000s, like 2008, 2009. I was like, oh yeah, I definitely want the debut Warzone LP, you know?
Right.
And that just popped up. And it wasn't expensive. It was like $30-$40 or something. So
I had to wait for the repop.
An X-ray tech. I don't know if you know this or not, or if you maybe even have any, but do you have any X-ray records, like Russian bootlegs? Because they used to print them on X-ray paper.
Yeah, that is really cool. Yeah. I wonder if like any of those like old, like, because there were like speed and thrash metal bands that existed before the fall of the Iron Curtain, yeah. Like Shaw. There's this band Shaw that are really good. They sound a lot like Metallica, or like good era Metallica. I wonder if any of those type of bands ever did that. I don't know, but that would be incredibly cool. But I'm not that cool.
I've seen some like on eBay and stuff, but it's always just something that is completely, it's a be like some weird orchestral thing that I have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
Like fucking Somberlane in E minor or something.
You wouldn't get like maybe like Cyndi Lauper or anything.
I would get one just to get one, but I just like, they always come from Russia and the fucking shipping's expensive.
Dude, I bet they'd just destroy your fucking needle too.
Oh yeah. I wouldn't play it. I'd just have it for a decorative piece because it's cool. But I'd want like I don't know, like give me a rib cage or something. Like I don't want just like a femur that's just like a straight bone or something.
Yeah, yeah. Give me a rib cage.
Give me a rib cage, okay?
Yeah.
Let me get the occipital region of a skull. I don't want any of that finger shit. Yeah.
Well, fingers might be cool. Those are kind of, you know, there's a lot going on in there bone wise. I just wouldn't want like one, like, you know, like Flintstones looking fucking dinosaur bone, like straight across the record.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, as far as I could gather, I read a couple of articles about that, like when I don't know when that was being talked about, whenever that was, 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. And from what I gathered, it was kind of a while ago. Like I don't even know, it might even predate like heavier music that they were doing.
I think
that.
It was like 60s, because it was a lot of American like Elvis and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I was gonna say there was a lot of like bebop and shit like that.
Yeah. But regardless, they make cool collectibles, I will say that.
Yeah, it'd be cool to have one for sure.
But yeah, I had to ask you the dissection question just because I'm always curious. Because I know a handful of people that have an official one, because there's like 20 fucking bootlegs out there. I have Ryan Koss and Somberlane, but I've never in person seen an official Storm, and I would not pay $400 for it. I have the CD. I'll stick with that until they repress it or whatever.
Yeah, it's been repressed a bunch of times. I know the first two were repressed without the original artwork. It was just like the logo on a black sleeve. I'm like, really? Like, why could you not get the rights from Christian Necrolord Whalen? Or what? Why? What's the reasoning behind like not having the awesome original artwork on?
Yeah,
both
that's
of them?
How Somberlane yeah, was.
Yeah.
Dissection straight across it. But then they just did a pop-up one like a year ago.
Yeah,
like the horseman pop-up or whatever when you fold out the gatefold. So I don't know. Maybe they got the rights to it.
I think that's pretty awesome. Like
it's cool, yeah, but I didn't buy it because I already got it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I have a problem with that, like where, like for instance, I just bought the first two Macabre records, that serial killer obsessed death metal band from the 90s. And I do have them on CD too, but I was like, that's one of those bands where like I love that band's early output. And that's when I'm like, okay, I need to have this on wax, you know? So I will, I don't buy more than one copy usually of anything like on one particular format, with the exception of the Left 4 Dead Acrid split, where I'm like, these are cheap and they're shaped like a buzzsaw and they're in like a bunch of different colors. I'm going to buy a bunch of these.
Yeah. I get that.
But, I generally don't get it. Like, and it ranges. Like, I noticed a lot of like serious Revelation Records, like Youth of Today type of people will own like 30 copies of Break Down the Wall in different pressings. I'm like, why?
Yeah, dude, it's funny that you mentioned that, because it's like I have a CD copy of that album, and it just got repopped again, like I think for this week on like Pink. And I still can't bring myself to like put up the $20 to get the on vinyl, because I'm like,
how many colors did they do Gorilla Biscuits in?
Dude, same thing. It's like, and I'll just keep my original like little CD from 90 whatever it came out.
Yeah, but I will buy multiple formats, and you can tell the measure of how much I love a band by how many formats I have it in. I have something that I refer to as the three format club, where I'm like, okay, I have this on cassette, vinyl, and CD. Oh,
yeah, the trifecta.
And that's like a Terrorizer, World Downfall, I have on a bunch of formats. I'm trying to think.
I don't collect many tapes. I do have Sons of Northern Darkness, Immortal on all three.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for tapes, I'm not like a big tape guy.
I was going to say, there's only a couple that I can maybe think of that I have all three. I might have all two. I'm not all two.
I got some Queen Latifah on all three.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's interesting.
So what is some of the stuff that you've been picking up lately for CDs and tapes and records that you've been into?
Oh, geez. Let me see here. I have been on this big Discogs deep dive of this like late 90s emo violence, it was referred to at the time. I actually just made an Instagram post about this where I was talking about what I was listening to. I was like, yeah, I've been into a bunch of quote unquote scrams and emo violence. I'm like, why can't somebody come up with a genre name that doesn't make me want to cringe out of my skin?
Right.
Yeah. But it's like stuff like The Locust, stuff like Jenny Piccolo, Inhumanity, Guiana Punchline. It's like almost grindcore. I think a lot of people called it grindcore in the late 90s, which I think pissed off a lot of like pure grindcore kind of people. But it's like that sort of like spazzy, herky jerky, fast, screaming, annoying kind of Charles Bronson style vocals, like that kind of thing. I've been really big on a lot of that stuff lately. Asterisk was one band I really been into. Like I said earlier, I've been getting into The Locust for the first time. Orchid, Bucket Full of Teeth, like all these bands. And at the same time, I've been listening to like a lot of just really brutal death and grind, which you'd think that might be like pretty common for me, but honestly, I haven't been really thirsting for this kind of stuff, like this kind of really brutal barbaric death metal and grindcore for a while. Like I haven't really been in deep as much as this in quite some time. So
yeah, because some of that stuff, like once you hear enough of it, you're like, all right, I gotta listen to something else, because everything starts to blend together a little bit.
Yeah, I have to definitely throw in a palate cleanser when I'm like hanging out listening to music wherever it is, like throw on some Descendants or like like last night I listened to like hours of it, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna listen to the Ashes discography. They were like that like emo band from DC from like the mid-90s. They had a female singer, and it sounded like Natalie Merchant from 10,000 Maniacs singing for an emo band. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna throw that on.
I'm gonna have to check that one out. I've never listened to that band.
They're great. It's the guitarist was the singer from Damnation AD's brother.
Nice.
It's weird because you have these really cool, like sad sort of angelic vocals. And then he does backing vocals where he's like, like screaming. But I had to throw that on. But as far as like newer death metal bands, there's brand new record that just came out this year. This band Dipygus, I think that's how it's pronounced. Dipygus. They're from California. And they're one of those kind of like, you know, cave dwelling, disgusting, swampy, relatively straightforward, like not very technical kind of death metal bands, like in the vein of in the Autopsy school of stuff. But they've really kicked it up with their newest record. There's a lot more like kind of atmospheric, like horror synth work on it. It sounds like they have Moog on it at one point, and their whole vocal, their whole lyrical bent is very interesting. It seems like it revolves around a lot of like cryptozoology and stuff. So that record's been kicking my ass. That's been my favorite like metal record for the past week.
Yeah, I just added that to my Apple Music library. I like the cover.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all the records up until now are pretty solid too, but they're pretty comparable to stuff like Molder or Ruin or, you know, that kind of thing. They're really kind of like breaking from the pack on this one, I feel like.
What about for like hardcore stuff? Because there's a ton of newer hardcore stuff that's been coming out in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I've been really paying attention to a lot more of like the D-beat kind of stuff. I did take it upon myself to buy that Gel record that came out. I really enjoyed that because I've been hearing about that band for ages and I knew they were good. And there's like that whole kind of wave of like monosyllabic hardcore bands like Gel and Spy and Gum and all that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I really enjoyed that record. Like from late last year, trying to think, like the Flower record that came out last year was really good. It sounds exactly like Nausea or very similar to Nausea. That band Destruct from Richmond. Awesome, kind of like not straight up D-beat, but very like D-beat driven, fast hardcore stuff. There's a local band here, Scarecrow, who are really good for that style. For like heavier hardcore kind of stuff, not at all like that. I don't listen to a ton of stuff like that, but there's kind of a more like, I wouldn't say they're straight up beat down because I don't think it's like totally just for people to beat the crap out of each other, but it's definitely like a heavier breakdown oriented kind of band. This band Pure Bliss from Syracuse that are really, really good. And I was, you know, exposed to that because I have friends from there and it's actually one of my friends' kids' band. I really dug that. That's really, really good. Yeah, last year I really liked the Colossal Man demo that came out. It's a band from Idaho, I think, or not Indiana. I get my I states confused. Band from Indiana, from Fort Wayne.
Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Really, like locking out like New York hardcore kind of stuff. Yeah, brand new hardcore. I get confused. There's a lot of stuff coming out right now, but I tend to kind of stick in the D beat and like crust kind of range. There's a band called Public Acid that's also from Richmond that just put out a new record that I really need to check out. So I'm excited for that.
That's cool. What is some of the stuff, like, do you have any anticipated releases coming out this year?
I always don't do well with this question because I always forget what's coming out.
I do.
The main one that's coming out that I'm excited about is that I talked about it. I did the metal tag thing where that was one of the questions. I'm excited about the Lifeless Dark LP that I think it's done recording. They're just like putting it together, but it's very similar in a lot of ways and heavily influenced by Sacrilege from the UK.
Okay.
That were an 80s. They were thrash metal, but they were punks playing thrash metal. And they had like a big influence on Bolt Thrower and a lot of the crust stuff. They put out a demo like 2 or 3 years ago that was excellent. And the guitarist is Chris Corey, who has been in tons and tons of bands, including Magic Circle and Mind Eraser. And just, he's one of those Boston guys that's like in a shit ton of bands. He always does good work. So I'm really stoked on that coming out. And the other big one was, there was a grind band from Finland that they had one of my favorite records last year called Sonic Poison. Very similar in a lot of ways to like Repulsion and stuff like that, like real stripped down, nasty death grind kind of shit, kind of punkish. They're doing an EP and anything they put out is awesome. So I'm stoked that they're have a lot of elevated level of output because I just want more from that band and it's grind. So it's over quickly. Like I need another fix of their shit. Cause they're really, really good.
I've noticed, that in a lot of newer, like power fucking beat down hardcore records are like 18 minutes, 17 minutes.
Yeah.
20 minutes. Like, yeah. It's cool how they went back to that short, fast fucking.
It's cool, but it's almost like when an episode of a show like ends on a cliffhanger and you're like, fuck, what happened?
And they just put out an EP and then you buy that and then you're like, where's the next LP? And then they got it down, dude.
They got their marketing tricks down.
Fuck yeah. But no, it's definitely cool because you can get it in like real quick.
Yeah, I want to explore a little bit more of that stuff. I get so consumed with like whatever I'm obsessed with. All I know is that like that Tsunami band is freaking huge right now.
Oh, I know. Now, I just got asked a question, or I didn't get asked it, but there was like a question posed of like Tsunami is the perfect example. So they're like, it's Tsunami style, bitch, what's up? I'm gonna fuck you up, right? But then you see them and you're like, they're like tough enough to kick a puppy, dude. You know, yeah. and it's not like Fury of Five or something where you like believe it, you know?
Right. It's weird. It's a modern thing. And I've heard it discussed, you know, amongst on a couple of different platforms, groups on Facebook and whatever, that it's like older heads are like, I can't take this fucking seriously. And I don't, it's like, I don't think you're supposed to.
No. I just think it's straight it's up design. Yeah. And it's like, so you can mosh and.
Well, like at this point, you're not going to do anything that hasn't been done in most cases.
Right.
So like they're just reminiscing on the shit that influenced them. Right. And just because they haven't done a 10-year prison stint and look like it doesn't mean that they can't, you know, make the music. It just means that they ain't going to kick your ass like the other guys would have.
Yeah, and I think that was always like kind of part of the conversation as time went on, you know, throughout the 90s and into the 2000s. Like I remember hearing the Mongoloids and being like, okay, I get it. Like they sound a lot like Sheer Terror. I love Sheer Terror. And then I saw them and I was like, these are kind of like little dudes from New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's plenty of little dudes from New Jersey that could mop the floor with me. Don't get me wrong. But it was like the band not really looking like what they sounded like. I mean, hell, I was in a band where I was more or less ripping off Paul Bearer and John Brannon. I am a tiny guy that is not very tough. So, I mean, there you go right there. So,
what was the name of the band? Because that sounds awesome.
Interesting combination of two totally different styles.
So, and, you know, if you want to get into some of the bands I was in, none of the bands I was in really went anywhere. They were all just for fun. No regrets, like super good time. But I was in a band called Dagger's Rule when I was in Syracuse. I was living back there between 2003 and 2006. And I played in a couple of different bands. Dagger's Rule had members of other, that's the thing. I was in the side project bands of like bigger bands. So they never really thrived that much, but DR had the drummer who played in Attitude and Black Sheep Squadron at one point, and the guitarist that also played in Attitude. And it was like a weird combination of, some of the stuff was almost like 80s skate punk, like kind of like JFA and shit like that. There's occasional like weird little like surfy solo, definitely heavily Negative Approach influenced. And that was more or less our demo. And then our second demo that we intended to be a 7-inch got heavier, got like a heavier tone from the guy producing it. And that was more like beefed up NYHC leaning, I guess.
Yeah.
That's where more like the Paul Bearer kind of influence seeped in. But I mean, there's a 7-inch that I think there's a bunch of copies on Discogs for pretty cheap. But it's funny because it was like that era of skate punk being big again, or skate thrash or whatever, you know, like Bones Brigade and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
We had that theme, but we definitely didn't sound like that. You know, like our 7-inch that was drawn by my friend Mike, who's a great artist, who played in Black Sheep Squadron. It looks like a Santa Cruz, like Jim Phillips art with like neon, and there's like a shark eating like skate. It's very mid 2000s looking, but it
sounds
doesn't
like totally not that.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, I mean, it was a super fun, and I had lyrics against like bullshit tough guy attitudes and stuff. It just like, it sounded like hard guy type of shit.
Right.
Mixed with skate punk. Like, but it was a fun band to be in for sure.
That's cool. I'm going to look into that for sure.
Do you still play in any bands just for fun or anything, or no?
I haven't played in bands since I went back to school for X-ray, and that was when I was 31. So it's been a while now. It's been 14 years.
Okay.
And I mean, I had a great time doing it, and I've still held on to pretty much all the recordings of all the bands I've done since I was like 17. So it's cool to go back and listen to them. I was very lucky to jam with some pretty talented people. I was always just a vocalist, but I got to be in a couple of bands with people that went on to like do a lot of cool stuff. So that's cool, you know.
Hey, it's, man, cool. I think what you do is pretty fucking cool too, though, you know.
What's that?
What you do is pretty cool too.
Oh yeah, no, I love what I do. Like
I'm saying like your channel and shit, it's fucking dope.
Oh yeah, I mean I'm really really super happy that first of all, like I took a very long hiatus between I want to say like summer of last year, like early summer, and just a couple of months ago. And I was kind of burnt out on it for a while. I had some family stuff going on that I just didn't feel the energy to do. And I was kind of trying to do a weekly stream where I was interviewing people, and that was going okay for a while, but it was kind of losing steam for various reasons. And I just came back. I was between jobs. I was leaving my old job and in the process of taking a little time off before I started this one. And I was like, you know what? Like, why don't I crank out a bunch of videos? And I did. And like, it's been going really, really well. It's weird because I did this recent Metallic hardcore video, and then just yesterday I uploaded a video about underrated, like straightforward, fast 90s hardcore. And it's funny because my punk and hardcore videos historically, going back to like years ago, got half the views of anything I did talking about metal. And I mean, today, like it's been really, really good. I mean, I don't have a ton of subs or anything like that. I'm certainly not living off of my channel, but it's been like double the amount of people watching this stuff lately. So I'm very excited. I'm glad people like what I do. I mean,
it takes time and consistency of actually like doing it to get noticed. Like, cause there's, you know, like you said, you're not the only one. Same with like what we do. We're not the only podcast that sits and talks about music.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I mean, I it's a fun hobby. Like I've been learning as I go with editing and stuff like that. And that's a big part of the fun of it. I like finding funny stuff to clip in or superimpose over the screen or whatever, you know, like that's been
right.
A lot of it for me is like, and it's an arduous process. Like people that do it professionally, I watch a lot of YouTube other than music stuff. I watch a lot of like commentary stuff and political stuff. I never really thought about how much goes into like just throwing splicing in video and doing picture in picture stuff and all that zooming in and all that stuff. It's just like sitting there for hours and like putting little boxes around shit and clicking and cutting and pasting. Like it can be a lot of work. Like
yeah, that
metalcore vid I did, it's almost an hour long, and it was like 4 hours or something total probably editing that. So
I believe it.
That's how, like, when we first started doing podcasting, when I was editing, it took me way, way longer than it does now. Like, now I'm pretty fluent in it, so it doesn't, you know, it's a little longer than what the episode is. But since we're not doing any video currently, mm-hmm. which we'll get to that down the road, but it's pretty, it's smoothed over pretty well at this point. But we have nice equipment, so the equipment does most of the work for us.
That's good. That's good for sure. That's the other thing. I keep upgrading and upgrading equipment. My next move is to get a nicer camera. You know, I have a webcam. It's a nice webcam. It's, you know, one of the nicer, it's a Brio, and I forget the specifics of it, but it's an HD webcam, but it's still a webcam and you can tell,
right.
You know, I want to get like a real,
an actual camera.
Yeah, like put down $500 or $600 or more on like a Sony, kind of vlogging camera kind of deal.
So how long have you been doing your channel for?
That the journey began back in 2016. I'm not sure if I was still off on paternity leave or not. I don't think I was. I think, but I was a new dad, and I had, like I was talking about, I had Fridays off. I was doing the overnight thing back then too. And my kid was crawling and he was in daycare all day. And I was just, and when he was an infant, we would just, you know, hang out with him all day, you know, especially when he was just born, and just watch YouTube and stuff. So I started coming across these like mostly metal record. It's mostly a metal phenomenon with a lot of the record collectors. There's people that are normies that, you know, talk about their Beatles records or whatever, classic rock.
The normies.
You know, a lot of like dad types that are like, I went to the flea market and I found a Creedence record. And it's like, oh, that's, you know, I like Creedence too. And don't give me no shade. Those channels can be totally entertaining just because it's all about the personality and person talking about the music. Right. But
my only beef with those is like, it's been covered so much, endlessly. Like, what can you say about the Beatles that has not been said?
Or Kiss, you know?
Or Kiss, or Metallica, or, you know, it's an ongoing thing. But continue. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, no problem. But yeah, I discovered that what's known colloquially, what's known as the VC, which a lot of people call, it's in the vinyl community. So, and that's just people on YouTube that just talk about their record collections. There's a subset of the VC that's mostly metal people. There wasn't ever really a lot of people doing punk and hardcore stuff exclusively. Now there is. Now there's a handful of people doing it. For a while, my friend Jason Hook, who doesn't really make videos anymore, was the one guy that was like talking about hardcore records and punk records and stuff, a friend of mine from Boston. But back then, a lot of the adpocalypse stuff hadn't happened with YouTube yet. And some of these metal channels, had a decent following, not to the level of other genres of YouTube, but I think one of the bigger ones was Sean Blagareth, Count Blagareth, who just came back. That guy has like 30,000 subs or something like that. I think Wyatt X Him has like 40. There's another guy, Canyon Bickle, that was really popular. I don't know how many he has, but it seemed like after a while, the whole algorithm and all that, and it got flooded. It got inundated with people talking about death metal records and stuff. It was kind of a gold rush for it, and it kind of slowed down. But around the time that I came on was when a bunch of people did. And the difference between me and some of those people that were already doing it was that I was a little bit older. It seemed like a younger kid, like, you know, whatever, dudes in their mid-20s. Talking about like the metal that they're into, then like myself and my friend Marty and a bunch of other people were like, hey, I'm an old crusty bastard that was around in the 90s. Let me talk about what I'm into. And there was a thread going around, basically like a reply video thing called the 20 records that got me into death metal. And I was like, oh my God, I want to make one of these so bad. Like, I don't know. It'll be so fun because I have like so much to talk about with all this, and I have a decent sized record collection. So I made the video, you know, I think I duct taped my phone to the back of a chair.
That's awesome.
And, you know, no editing, just no intro. I think it still just said like my name instead of, cause I hadn't decided on a channel name for at least a few updates. I came to that pretty quickly, but I was like, I just made the video and just talked, and like, I got a ton of positive responses. They were like, oh man, you know, this was great. Like, what's up? My channel's this, and a bunch of people added me on social media, and it's kind of just been like a cornerstone of my lifestyle since then. You know, and it's had its ups and downs and stuff like that. I mean, COVID of course was gnarly for everybody. It was kind of fun because we had Friday streams during the pandemic when a bunch of us would all be on, and we'd be talking and shit for like 8 hours, and there would be people watching the entire time. I'm like, how shit. How do people, I mean, a lot of those streams, I was like, please private this, because I was hammered and I said some dumb shit. Not too many of those survived, thankfully, because it was a rough time. I mean, it was COVID, and I'm a healthcare employee. I'm like, and we didn't know what we know about it now. I'm like, I feel like I'm constantly just like hanging out, flirting with the, So like, yeah, it was a little dark, you know? But I mean, yeah, it had its ups and downs. Mostly it's been a positive experience in terms of handful of trolls, you know, here and there, but it's not like
it's the internet, man. You're going to have that,
but not to the level that I thought I would. That's the crazy thing. I mean, and it's still, I mean, I'm a pretty small channel, but I think it's just that it's funny because a lot of people that are going to comment on a lot of metal, on your average metal YouTube video seem to be overwhelmingly positive. There's a lot of like broken English, like, oh, like this very much. Thank you for this metal time. You know, like
It's awesome.
Like a lot of metal fans are just overwhelmingly like passionate about what they're into. So a lot of that kind of rubs off. I've had a few people be dicks, but honestly, not the extent that I thought I would. So, I mean, that's definitely cool.
I think the people that are watching the videos are like the same kind of like-minded people like Jeremy or myself or yourself, where like, this is what we do day to day, is talk about music, whether it's metal or, you know, Jeremy and I are into all sorts of different shit, jazz, hip hop, you know.
It's like you everything. Said about you just, you wanted to get that shit you, out, yeah, you know.
You want to have, I don't know, you're going to talk about it. If somebody's going to listen, cool, but like you're going to talk about it anyways.
Right.
And I think it helps you find different music too. Like every time we interview somebody, or even if we're doing just an episode with just the two of us, like we always have a list of stuff to check out afterwards.
Right. And I think, and for me, it was just such a nice vehicle for me to like continue my passion, despite the fact that my life had changed a lot. I mean, I was a new dad. We had just bought a house in Salem, which is, I mean, as the crow flies, it's only like 12 to 15 miles from Boston, but the way Boston traffic is and stuff, like we were still hanging out and going to shows when we could, but it used to be before pre-kid and everything, my wife and I were going to the Middle East and going to basement shows and whatever, like a couple of times a week, because we both lived more or less in Boston. And it, you know, when you have a kid, things change. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely happy that it did. But I still had that kind of piece missing where I wanted to bro down with people and talk tunes, you know. And YouTube really facilitated that. So
yeah, because you know, sometimes you like, if there's like a casual listener, I guess, where they're like, yeah, I dabble in a little bit of this or that, like sometimes when you're talking about stuff, you're like, oh my God, this band, this band, this band, this band. Like, it's like you're slapping them in the face with like, there's an episode of Family Guy where there's this dude who has like these pictures of his kid in his wallet, and he's like slapping the dude in the face with it. And like,
oh yeah, so I remember that.
Sometimes like it, I feel like I'm that guy doing that, where I'm like just throwing fucking artist after artist after artist, and most of these people are just like, yeah, I'm not gonna check all that out.
Yeah, and I mean, the type of field I work in, like, there's not a lot of subculture people. There's not really that many people that know, would have any idea what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah. So it's cool to connect with all the people worldwide that do know what you're talking about, or if they don't know, they want to know, like, you know, and then they have something to input that you might not know.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's kind of the nice thing about it, is I probably could, I don't know, it's kind of a dice roll, but, and I hope the channel grows, you know, and I hope to do this many years into the future, and then I get more success. And I want to improve it and make it as entertaining and cool and visually appealing as possible. But I also want to do it my own way. I'm not going to name names of channels, but there are some very successful music oriented, particularly punk, hardcore, metal oriented channels on YouTube that people that live off of it. And I know that there's sort of a formula, and it seems to be a lot of it is like, I'm a this and that historian, I'm a this and that professional. Yeah. And it's this sort of like, I'm a journalist kind of thing. And top 10 thrash metal releases you need to hear before you die. Like this sort of,
I know exactly what you're saying, man. And it's like, those motherfuckers don't even know what they're talking about.
Yeah. And that's the thing. A lot of some of these channels have no idea what they're talking about. I mean,
About yours though, is it feels authentic. Like you actually know what you're talking about. You care about the shit that you are talking about, and you're not trying to be like some YouTube personality. You're just trying to be you and talk about music.
Right. And I mean, believe me, like there is success to be had if you want to do that. And no shade, honest, and also no shade to those people for doing that. Like, get that bag, you know what I mean? Like, good for you. I don't know like how much sustainability is going to be over the years for that, but hey, you know, knock yourself out. But with me, it's part of it is just like this sort of symbiotic exchange I have with people that watch my, like, for example, that Metallic Hardcore, you know, 89 through 2004 video that I did. So many people came out, a lot of people from Europe, which I was really stoked about, because I was talking about that, like, Belgian Hate Thousand stuff, which I'm a total noob to, by the way. Like, those bands, I never really checked them out before like a couple of months ago. I've been aware of them for 20 years or longer, but I was like, yo, I just checked out Liar in Congress. This shit's great. And a lot of people were totally like, dude, that's awesome. If you like these bands, check out these other bands that you probably wouldn't have heard of if you, you know, unless you were from Europe. And I was like, awesome, I'll check them out. You know, so a lot of it's just like learning about new stuff from my audience, which is great. It's a nice exchange, you know?
Yeah, that's some of the best, like, the whole reason for doing it. Like, that's one of the best parts of it, I think.
Yeah.
I guess, like, in the, you know, in the sincerity thing, you can definitely tell that you go to shows or you've gone to shows. And you know what I'm saying? Like, you definitely come across as, like, the dude you'd run into in line, like, oh, hey, what's up, man?
Yeah, for sure. It's weird. Like, I don't get recognized super. I've only actually been recognized, I think, like once or twice. But it was very weird the couple of times that I was. Like, it was years ago at this point. I think I went to go see Horrendous and Tomb Mold in Worcester. It was before I moved. And a guy who's, like, totally a friend of mine now, like a real friend, who's friends with a bunch of people I know from Massachusetts in the metal scene. He just came up to me randomly and was like, love your vids, man. And I was like,
paparazzi.
I just don't know how to react to stuff like that. Like, yeah. I always was a little cagey and just didn't know how to take people coming up to me that knew me because I was known for one reason or another. Like, the most popular band that I had ever been in, it wasn't that popular, was a crust band when I first moved to Boston called Class Action. And we were on the guy from Toxic Narcotics record label. And we used to open a lot of, like, punk shows in Boston. The entire Boston scene was insane at that time. Whether you're talking about the Youth Crew Revival stuff or Converge blowing up or the street punk scene with, like, the Unseen and all that, like, just an amazing scene for years and years. But we would play VFW halls, but big ones, opening for Toxic Narcotic and the Unseen, where, you know, we'd be playing in front of like 300 kids, sometimes like almost 400, like packed halls. And I got all these people that were like, oh, you're the dude from that band. And I, like, never really got that before. And it didn't last for long. I mean, we were around for, like, after I joined the band for like a year, and then the kids in the band, like, all kind of, like, went to college and stuff like that. I was the old man in the band at 21. but it was very strange to me that I was like, do people actually want to talk to me because they want to meet me, or they want to talk to me because I growl in a freaking crust band?
Yeah, it's that would it, be weird.
That was weird. Like, people that have any modicum of, like, real fame, I don't know how they handle it, because it's always feels really strange to me. One of the guys that works at Sorry State, I was on a different stream, Analog Attack, which is awesome. It's this British guy that lives in Osaka, Japan, and he has all kind of, like, a rogues gallery of people, like, people from the 90s hardcore and punk scenes, like, again, more leaning towards, like, the DIY crust and hardcore. But he's had, like, Artie Philly from Milhouse and Indecision on. He's had, like, guys from Devoid of Faith and Drop Dead, like, all that stuff. Like, they're on, like, every Friday just talking about, like, five records they've been listening to that week. And I was on that and a couple of times, and I went into the record store and the guy behind the counter was like, dude, were you on Analog Attack last week? What are you listening to? I'm like, yeah, I was on What Are You Listening To? And I was like, hey, how's it going? But I mean, that was nice because I got to be friends with that guy, but it was also weird being recognized. And I just forget, like, oh yeah, I don't have a ton of subs, but I have, I'm going to be at probably 3,000 soon. That's like at least 3,000-ish people that know who I am one way or another, right? Which is, by today's standards, that's a fraction. That's a drop in the bucket. It's not a lot.
That's more than the average person, though,
that's
really.
That's more, like, people than not follow me.
Yeah, I try to conceptualize that. Like, that would be a very packed venue, you know what I mean? Like, that's
right,
very,
right.
Show.
So I know a dude that works at a gas station here, and I've gone in and he's had our podcast playing before, and I'm like, this is fucking weird, because it's like over the loudspeakers in the store and stuff.
Oh, that's pretty weird.
Yeah, I did have a dude come in here, and now, like, I forget his name already, but he's cool, and he just recognized me by my voice, and I was like, whoa, that's fucked up.
Yeah,
that only happened once.
Huh, that's funny.
Well, I mean, yeah. I hope your channel continues to grow, because I like your content, and
yeah, you got our support for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Definitely, cool. Like, it was cool to see, like, one of the first videos that I seen, like, when Jeremy brought it to my attention, because I'm not, like, a big YouTube watcher, but my kid is, so honestly, okay. I learned, like, a lot through him, like, because he already knew who you were. He's like, yeah, I know that guy. I'm like, oh, all right. And so he watches like your show and like Killbot and like stuff like that.
Yeah, and Killbot's been around. That Killbot dude's been around for a long time. He's part of that like original wave that I was talking about. That where like
yeah,
yep.
We interviewed him like a while back too.
Oh, really? Okay, right on.
And it was cool to see like you talking about Majesties for one, because that's like been a band since that album came out that I've been just shoving in people's faces. So I'm like, if you like this, listen to this. Like it'll it's amazing.
I mean, everything Tanner's done is really impressive. I love Obsequiae too. But yeah, that record's really good. And I'm not a big Melodeath guy either. Like there's plenty of bands that I probably should spend more time with. Of course I love Slaughter of the Soul. Mm-hmm. And stuff that's a little bit more mean and blackened-ish, like that could probably be considered like half black metal too, like bands like Sacramentum and Unanimated and stuff like that. But I'm not like I'm not super well versed in melodic death metal. But like that record's it's just so perfect. Like it's so good.
Yeah, I didn't know about Obsequiae until after that record came out. And then I was like going back looking at like other stuff that they've done, like you know, like Carl was in Inexorum and Antiverse, and like Tanner's had Obsequiae and some other bands too. And I love them both. Like Obsequiae, I was just listening to it last night, actually.
It's so perfectly, I mean, it's, I don't know if it's like 100% like a serious thing and if it comes directly from Tanner or just what other people came up with, but Castle Metal really works as a niche genre name that only that band belongs to, you know. Yeah, it's just,
we just interviewed a band called Weld and Woe that is also labeled as Castle Metal.
Okay. Yeah. I actually meant to listen to that episode, but I listened to the other one with the woman who owns that label.
Oh,
that
yeah, black Fied.
Yeah, that was cool, because I listened to that, and then the day later I hopped in the car with my wife, and she put on something that was put out on that label. Like I saw it on the on the display from like Bandcamp or whatever. I was
right
like,
on.
Oh, sweet. I was just listening to an interview with the proprietor of this.
Yeah, she's got all sorts of cool shit. And I think she puts out, like, she has, like, Fied Fridays or whatever, where she's always got new drops on Fridays.
That's cool. Yeah, and it's tough. Like, I have a small imprint myself that's put out, like, 3 tapes, and it's not easy. That's the thing. Like, I'm like, hats off to people that run labels and stuff. For me, I've put out old Syracuse demos so far, like, and stuff that I think, you know, should be, get greater exposure to the world, because everybody knows Earth Crisis, of course, and maybe Black Sheep Squadron. Like the Syracuse scene precedes itself, you know, and there's lots of good stuff from here. And I think there was even an article about 7 new like hardcore bands from Syracuse and like a relatively big music outlet online.
I think that was in No Echo.
It was one of those. And I was like, that's awesome, that's still going on. I get homesick all the time. Like growing up in that scene was incredible. But I put out a few tapes, and like it's cool, and you know that it costs money, you know, but I'm like 100 run of really nice tapes, it's like $500 like easily, you know. So I mean, hats off to her for all of her output and everything, because I'm kind of like learning as I go. I'm like running a small online distro too, and putting out some releases. I don't have anything planned beyond what I've done so far. I'm sure I'll do more in the future, but I'm kind of shifted my focus back to the channel and getting like better equipment for now. But doing the distro too has been also like a really cool thing.
I just noticed that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like you put up stuff that like you've heard or you only listen to like once or twice, and then like you put it up.
No, I mean, some of the stuff is, you mean from, like from my collection or?
Like I went through Instagram and then like through your link tree, and then it was under your distro.
So most of the stuff that I stock is new. I have some stuff that, are used items and stuff like that.
Do you have a name for your distro, or is it the same Ground as your YouTube Zero channel?
Salem. Okay. Yeah, it's just Ground Zero Salem.
Cool. I didn't know if you were separating the two or.
Yeah, the name of the label is GZS physical media. But the, yeah, it's just the distro is just groundzerosalem.com.
Cool. I'll make sure I put a link to it in the episode description when we post this.
Yeah. I'm still selling stuff. I haven't gotten any new stock in a while. Generally I just like, it's very small. So generally I just go through ebullition and, cause I mean that, what a great distro, you know, what a foundation for if you want to just sell hardcore records or buy some for yourself in bulk or whatever, but right. I'll put in like, you know, usually like $500 to $700 and whatever's new, and some classic stuff I think deserves love. I mean, it's all formats. I mean, I tend to stock vinyl more than anything else because that sells better than anything else.
Tapes and, are getting up there though, man. Like I've noticed a lot of people buying tapes.
Yeah. And there's like a lot of good boutique tape labels, especially with metal. Noxious Ruin is a really awesome one that I've distroed their stuff. And I should talk to them about wholesale again, cause I really love the guy's work. I believe he's from here in North Carolina. All of his tapes have like a thin cardboard cover that unfolds into like a cross. Like they all have it and it's all silk screened and they're in nice. Super limited runs. And he does all this like really, really good, like death and grind stuff. Some of it's older, like unearthing bands then reissuing discographies. Some of it's newer bands, but his work is gorgeous. And like I said, I've been a big fan of Head Split Records and Caligari Records for a really long time. I just like the stuff that they put out, and both of them were mostly exclusively tapes for a long time. And it seems like they're branching out into vinyl and CD here and there, but I think it's just because tapes are easy and cheap to put out. And that's what I've done. Like my three releases have all been on cassette. Eventually I'd like to do vinyl of all of my releases, but it's going to be a little bit of, you know, gaining capital and stuff like that before I'm able to do it. But
yeah, it's not a cheap task.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I do throw stuff in my distro where it's like, oh, I have doubles of this for some reason. Or
yeah. Is that like, I'm run across prisoner abuse and it's like, yeah, dude, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, is that what you were trying to talk about?
Yeah. Yeah. Like where it's like VG plus, it's like something that you've had used. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I have a big collection, and some of the stuff I'm just like, you know, this is great. I never really listened to it, or I have an extra copy of it or whatever. And I try to put like, if it's used, I try to put an accurate description or grade conservatively, as they say, you know,
because that's one thing about buying records online that's tough, is because everybody's their like threshold for what constitutes VG plus or like near mint or VGG, whatever. Everybody's is different.
Yeah. I mean, even if stuff is like brand new and it's like, oh, I played this once and really didn't like it, I'm going to throw it in the distro, I still put VG plus just because I just don't want to deal with it. And I mean, that's one reason why I don't even sell stuff on Discogs or eBay, just because I just don't want to deal with how people can make a, you know, a federal case over something that's not a big deal on there. With my distro, I have my own power to.
Right.
And I mean, if people have a legitimate gripe or something, I haven't encountered this yet, because it's pretty small, but I, you know, if people have a legitimate gripe or they're not happy with something, I'll refund them. No problem. You know?
Yeah. Or sometimes you'll have a post office mishap and something will come damaged or whatever, and it's got to be sorted out. But yeah, I mean, I sell on eBay and Discogs, mostly Discogs for the store. And, over the last few years I've had a couple instances, but really not that many, so overall it's been pretty smooth sailing.
That's good. I mean, I'm friends with Matt Calvert from Dark Descent on Facebook, and he'll post all the time about like random whack jobs that are freaking out over nothing. It seems like impatience is a big problem with like bigger distros and labels these days. Yeah,
absolutely. Where they just place the order and then they're like, it clearly says pre-order shipping out like 4 months from now, and they're like, where the fuck's my record at?
I mean, I've been guilty of that myself just because I didn't read the fine print. Now, my my emails are always very polite. Like I'm of course a gentleman and a scholar, but I emailed, I think, well, I wouldn't want to come I wouldn't want to do anything but come correct to this label, but it was Upstate Records. I was very polite, but I was like, hey man, I'm sorry to bother you. Like it was a Christmas present for my wife.
Shout out to fucking Mario and Kim.
Yeah, we interviewed them too.
Yeah.
Oh, right on.
We know those dudes.
But I was like, hey, I'm sorry to bug you guys. Like, I ordered this a while ago. They're like, yeah, man, it was a pre-order. I'm like, oh shit, I'm sorry. And I think that, you know, because it was some hardcore record for my wife or whatever. But
yeah, no, that's happened. Like, I've done it too. But for the most part, like, I've seen screenshots that people have posted from labels that are, or if like it says that it was supposed to come out on that date and it's not in their mailbox on that date, like, you're like, dude, I just got the thing myself. Like, I'm shipping out, you know, 500 orders or whatever. It will get there. Like, give the guy a week or two. Like, you know, it's not like boxing. And some of those people do that shit like in their living room. Like, it's not like boxing all that up carefully is just like a, you know, an assembly line process.
Yeah. Like, well, I think like there's these bigger, at least, I mean, I think for multiple genres, there's bigger operations. Like in metal, you've got Nuclear War Now and Hell's Headbangers that are like big functioning businesses that have employees and stuff.
Yeah. And that stuff, you know, they're cranking out a few hundred orders a day or whatever, but
right.
I'm talking like the guy that just, you know, re-released this record through like 1,000 copies and he's got to box all that shit up with like him and his wife or him and his, you know, brother or mom or whoever, you know, whatever the case may
be. Sister Scuzz.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. I mean, like even I've had moments, you know, times like for my distro where I put an update on social media, on Instagram, you know, swipe through, look at the records I've got, or I'll put out like a new release or something like that. And I'll get less than 20. I think the biggest one I got, like where I had to pack up a ton of stuff, was I put out reissued a demo by this band Blood Runs Black from Syracuse, not to be confused with as Blood Runs Black.
Yeah.
Who was like, it was Chris Weichman from Earth Crisis was in it. You know, it's kind of like a cult band if you like upstate New York hardcore, metalcore, whatever. Great band. I was super honored to reissue it. But I had people from like Japan and Europe and stuff ordering it. And I mean, I sold out. I didn't sell out of it. I still have copies left, but I sold about 50 copies of it in like a week or two. And it was just like, man, putting out all these is arduous. And I have a good setup for all that stuff. Like I've got a thermal label printer and my own little scale. And, you know, I just do it all at home and drop it off at the shipping store. It's not hard, but I'm like, this takes time.
Yeah,
and I have long.
It takes time to tape all that stuff up, box it all up, make sure that it's actually taped and boxed correctly instead of just, you know, cramming it in there.
Yeah. And it's like, I have long hair and it keeps getting stuck in the fucking tape. And like,
yeah.
I'll tie it back in a man bun and it's just a whole but yeah, so I mean I think Matt Calvert might still do Dark Descent. Like he definitely has like help, and I think he has a bigger house or something, but I think he does Dark Descent out of his house still. I'm not sure. If he does, that's crazy, because that's a pretty big, well-regarded death metal label. But I mean there's bigger.
Be surprised. I mean, there are people that, you know, they might convert their garage into like their headquarters or something.
Yeah, I think that's like pretty much how a lot of people do it. But what I was getting to with that is, I think with these bigger underground distros and labels like NWN and Hell's Headbangers and stuff, and probably and 20 Bucks Bin, you know, all those labels, and I'm trying to think of like the hardcore equivalent, well, Rev, of course. People are used to like, okay, these are really professional. These people are ship every day, so they get used to being like, okay, cool. Like I picked like the more expensive shipping I put in for my record, I'm going to get it in 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then when it's a slightly smaller label and it hasn't arrived in 5 or 6 days, they're like, where's my record? But like, I mean,
but
think
they don't
that,
give the big label any gripe. Like they're always hassling the little guy.
Right. And I mean, I think it's because the big label has the resources to ship stuff lightning fast.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not really fair. And I think a lot of people that are, again, a little bit longer in the tooth, such as myself, remember a time where, and I didn't order mail order stuff a ton when I was like a teenager, like in the 90s, but I did it here and there. And you would just like put a money order in the mail. And
yeah,
like,
dude.
Godspeed, you know, yep. Like
You know? I remember ordering like skate shit, even from like a mail order catalog.
Oh yeah, me too.
And it was kind of like, it's in California. I'll see it in a week. I don't know.
Takes five days to get there. It's 3 to 5 more days processing time, like, then 5 more days to ship it back to you.
I don't know. I'm pretty patient about those things. Because then it's like, oh, it's a nice surprise. Like,
yeah, I got enough shit to like keep me entertained. I will say with the store, though, I do get a little impatient because I'm used to getting stuff like 2 days. So I'm like, fucking, I want it now. But for independent people, I understand.
Yeah. And I understand that impulse. Like, I order stuff on Discogs constantly, and that's like individual people that are shipping stuff.
Yeah. And some of those people, it might be a week before they ship that stuff out.
Yeah. Like, I try not to be like too, I get a little antsy because you never know who's going to be a wild card. And then like after a month, be like,
they like spits in your order.
They're like, oh yeah, I actually don't have this. I tried to get it out of storage and I don't have it anymore. Here's your money back. And it's like,
yeah, I've ran into that too. Not very often, thankfully.
Thanks for reminding me. I just had to update my fucking status to shipped.
Oh, for your Discogs.
Yeah. There you go.
Couple things that I wanted to get into before we wrap this up is, one, we were going to talk about the Slayer reunion and like your thoughts on that, and personally, like, me and Jeremy were talking about this yesterday, and we saved it mostly for here to talk to you about it, but I don't know if you're on the same line, but it feels to me like a lot of bands now are announcing that they're breaking up and then like just going on a tour hiatus for a couple years only to like help their reunion quote unquote show sell better.
I don't think it's just metal either. Like, I'm definitely like haven't been on board. I did get to see Slayer without Hanneman, with the Exodus guy there.
Gary Holt.
Yeah, I had a brain fart. I got to see them we went on one of those metal cruises. We went on the motorboat and like, which was like, I'm glad we did, because it was like right before Lemmy passed, my wife and I. But I was like, oh, this will be funny, like seeing all these like metalheads, like middle-aged metalheads in swim trunks and stuff. Let's go check this out. And it was
many Hawaiian shirts.
But it was funny because like I really at that point, like for some reason, hadn't gotten around to seeing Slayer, and it was one of those woulda coulda shoulda, like I had a million chances, different things came up, like I never saw them when Hanneman was alive, which is I'm ashamed of. But I gotta say, with Holt, they were like pretty good. I was expecting the worst, and they played like 2 or 3 different sets on that boat, and they were pretty good. That being said, like, you know, I think it was their time, like with that style of thrash metal, like how fast it is and everything, you know, they're only going to be able to do that for so long. And I mean
Gary Holt's seasoned in that sort of shit with Exodus. So he was a good fill in. I will say that.
Yeah, he was great in the band, like, you know, hell of a player and all that. But and now it's like, I haven't really kept up on it, but what is it? What's the deal? Like, Kerry King isn't even involved. It's just Tom Araya. Like, with
I don't know actually that for sure. I didn't read that. Cause like, from what I've seen, it looked like Kerry King was involved, but he also does have that other band going on. That's kind of just like,
Slayer 2.0.
Without Tom singing, basically, from what I've heard.
And I have zero interest in that.
Yeah, like, I was on the same boat. Like, I seen it, and I was like, okay, first off, like, the name, like, you couldn't have thought of anything better than your own name for this band. And two, like, what are you really going to do that doesn't sound like Slayer? Because no disrespect to Kerry King, I doubt he's never going to listen to this anyways, but like, he's not that amazing of a fucking player.
No, I mean,
he's admittedly like, he doesn't even know what the fuck he's doing.
Okay, so that's exactly my point.
Like I remember reading an old like Guitar World. He's just like, man, I just fucking, what sounds good, man, I fucking rip it.
He's like the Lars Ulrich of guitars.
So he's
like,
never going to sound anything like anything but Kerry King, I guess.
And I mean, like, they kind of lost me after Divine Intervention. You know, there's those two, God Hates Us All, and what was the other one? The two, like, moshy kind of, not new metal, but, like, kind of groove metal records they did. And they had those Return to Form records after that were decent, but just didn't seem to have the same spirit as
the classic era.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, fast like the old stuff was. I mean, they're fine. You know, I'll listen to those records occasionally. They're better than a lot of other stuff that's like that, that's newer, I think, but like a wacky thrash, you know, kind of stuff that was big at the time. But like, I don't know. I get it. Like that's what they've been doing, or he's been doing for years. It's a source of income, but
yeah, I can level with that. But like my thing at this point is like, stop saying that you're breaking up only to just reform a couple years later. Like Kiss did that how many times? Black Sabbath did that how many times? Like there are countless amount of bands that have done that. Like
it's not even just metal bands.
And yeah, like, I was gonna say Fleetwood Mac, I believe, has done that a million times.
Mac's done it.
Bane's
had like quite a few. How many
last shows, last tours were done? Has Bane had?
Yeah, dude, I was talking about that to my old lady, because like for Valentine's Day, I got a Bane hoodie from like their last tour of extra merch. So she was like, oh, how'd you get this? I'm like, it's from their, you know, reunion show. You know, because it's like
the 3X reunion.
Yeah, they've been going on forever.
Yeah. No, it is that even, you know, pop, every genre has their artists that have done it. It's just like, I don't understand. I get if at the time you guys thought you were breaking up, but like, just take a break. Like, if you disappear for 3 to 5 years, like, it's not going to be the end of the world, but it looks better when you come out with something because you're like, oh, they haven't come out with something. Like, a good example is today, like, at the time of recording this, The New Job for a Cowboy came out. Last time they came out with a record was like 10 years ago. Did they say they were breaking up or they were done or whatever? Like, no, they just took a fucking long time to making the record.
Yeah, I was surprised about that. Like, I never followed them closely. And when, you know, when they came out, I was definitely in the camp of people that were like, I hate this shit.
But I was in that camp.
And I know they developed from like more of like a screamo deathcore, fashion core kind of band into like more or less a legitimate death metal band by the time they did their last record.
Yeah, I will say the progression from the first to the current is a lot different, because I seen them live in 2013, so like right before Sun Eater came out, and they're fucking killer. Like, but I'd never seen them like before that. I had listened to them before that, but I didn't really pay attention like in depth. But after seeing them live, and then like Sun Eater came out, and I was like, damn, this is really, really good. Like a lot further than, you know, whatever the first record was. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah. And I hadn't thought about them in ages. And then it was, I think Thralls of Metal, shout out to those dudes, had like, they always have like a preview. They preview their videos, like coming up tomorrow, like review of Job for a Cowboy, new record. I'm like, oh, wow.
That so, the artwork's killer too. I like it.
From what I heard, I dig it, and I didn't like their, I never got into them, or I wouldn't say I was like, oh, fuck this shit. I was just into something else at the time, you know what I mean?
And that happens a lot, too, where, like, at the time, you're like, you know, I didn't listen to this, and then down the road, you go back to it, and you're like, why didn't I listen to this 15 years ago?
I kind of like it, because it's like you find something new that's old, you know?
Yeah, I do, well, too.
Well, case in point, I mean, and kind of funny, because, I mean, the two aren't completely separate. I mean, you can see how one influenced the other in the long span of things. But for years, I hated the Locust on principle, just because they were such an influential band in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it was goofy because I liked a ton of bands that kind of sounded like them, and I liked the former bands that they were in before that, which was like Struggle and Swing Kids. But I think it was just they played in Boston. And then literally like a dozen kids started dressing like them. Like they all had the Beatles haircuts and the white belts and all the shit. And like those kids were nice, but they also had a whole thing where like, we're so over that punk and hardcore stuff. We're whatever this is now.
Yeah, we're better than everybody.
It was ostensibly just another offshoot of punk and hardcore, really. But I just couldn't stand that band for the longest time. And then like lately I've been listening to more kind of stuff in that realm, and I was like, you know, I should give the Locust another shot. And I watched the Justin Pearson documentary which is really, really good. And I was like, oh, I totally am on board with this band. This band's great. So I can totally see like hating stuff and learning to love it later or not being into it at the time. I was such a, when Job for a Cowboy was around, I was just such an adamant, like I hate seeing stuff. It's funny because I'm a super into metal person, but I was like, yeah, any like true metal, like Hesher metal, I love, but any skinny emo kids playing metal, I fucking hate that stuff. And, you know, I've come around on a lot of it. There's still a lot of the kind of Trustkill stuff and a lot of stuff that just will probably never be my bag, you know?
But I mean, that's why we have so many different genres of music. Like, not everything's going to be click for everybody. Like, Or it's sometimes you might hear it at one point, come back to it years down the road, and you like it. Like, I've done that a ton of times.
Oh, sure. It's one of those things with youth, you know, and being like, your early to mid 20s and being like, I'm defending my scene. This is what hardcore really is, kind of deal.
So. I just like spreading the music around, getting people, like, if I love a band, like, I'm not like, fuck you guys, I'm keeping this to myself. I'm like, I'm telling everybody about that shit.
Well, that's like my number one favorite record of last year was this band Saren Reaper. And where were they from? I'm forgetting already. I think they're from St. Louis. And they're like this really filthy mix of punk and death metal and grind and black metal. Like, they mix it up really well, but it sounds seamless. And I'm like, I don't know of anybody that really... I haven't heard anybody else really talking about this band, and this LP fucking shreds. It sounds like,
Noxious Black Vomit. Is that the album?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like Greg Ginn playing leads over like, I don't know, over a, like Disclosed jamming with Dark Throne or something. It's just,
I just added it to check it out.
Yeah. It's awesome. But that was one thing where I wanted to sing the praise of that to the heavens, because I feel like not a lot of people might have known about it. And it felt like a breath of fresh air to me. You know, it didn't feel like it was trying to be in any particular pocket, clearly like wearing their influences on their sleeves. Like, it's so rare nowadays to not come across somebody that's like, we're doing this genre because we love, like, that's totally fine. Like, that's been a thing since the early 2000s when people were like, hey, let's bring it back to 80s fast hardcore. Like, I'm not shitting on that at all, because I think some of the best metal and hardcore and all that stuff was from that decade. But I love hearing stuff where I'm like, it could be from the 80s or it could be from 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It's some other thing going on. Like, I love that. So
yeah, it makes for a nice blend of stuff. And it's a good surprise when you find a band like that. But I could go on and on and on and on about this like all day. So before we do wrap things up here, we do have one last question to ask you. And if you listen to any other episode, you already heard the question. What is one thing that you listen to that people would not expect you to listen to, since you're often associated with metal and hardcore and that sort of thing?
So I don't have a guilty pleasures list, because I don't believe you should feel guilty for anything you like.
Yeah. I don't ask it like that. That's why I don't use the word guilty pleasure. I just want to know, like, you know, most people associate you with metal and hardcore, et cetera.
There's plenty of stuff.
You could be into fucking obscure jazz for all I know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, it's funny, 'cause the older I get, the more, not closed-minded, but the more I'm like, just give me aggressive stuff, which is weird. I expected to be
the opposite, you
know, one of those people that kind of phased out of stuff when I was younger. Cause when I was in my late 20s, I was like listening to a lot of like neo folk and I don't know, like New Model Army and Husker Du and stuff like that. Post-punk, post-hardcore. I'd say maybe the most unexpected thing is, and this is like, I don't collect the records or anything like that, but I don't own any of it, but I'm so, have such a soft spot and happy place when I hear goofy, like hippie fucking frat rock shit from the 90s. Like, when I hear Spin Doctors, I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go. Little Miss Can't Be Wrong. Like,
Hootie count in that?
I never got into Hootie that much, but I also love Blues Traveler. When I hear that harmonica, I'm like,
yeah.
It just encapsulates a certain point in like my high school years where, and at the time I hated it. I don't know what it is, but there's that. I mean, I do like some hip hop. I like went on a big hip hop jag like a couple years ago. A lot of 90s stuff, Black Sheep, De La Soul, you know, nothing too out of the ordinary for that kind of thing. I'm trying to think what else. I love a lot of old soul. Again, nothing like hyper obscure, but I love Sam Cooke, Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, right, you know, up our alley, dude.
If all you the, have a all, soul, how can you not?
Yeah.
I mean, if you guys are anywhere remotely close to Detroit, you know.
Yeah, we know all about the Motown.
Yeah, I love old Motown and soul. I like a lot of, and I this isn't out of the pocket, really. It's like Horror Vacui, this band from Italy that are really good. Yeah, I mean, I like, I have an Enya CD sitting downstairs that was my parents'.
I don't mind Enya, some of it.
That's about it as far as I can remember.
Probably. I mean, those are all good answers. That's the type of shit I look for, though, because, like, you know, most people aren't going to be like, yeah, this Ground Zero Salem covers a lot of Sam Cooke and Marvin Gaye and stuff. Like, I don't like to try to make people feel like it's a guilty pleasure. I just want to know what else are you into?
I don't really think too many people do feel guilty that much about stuff.
And you shouldn't, like, at all. It doesn't seem to be. I just want to know what else people are into musically, because there's so much out there.
I one earlier video, I instead of spinning metal in the background, I was spinning like a Best of Curtis Mayfield CD, and I was like, yeah, I was like, yeah. I fucking love Curtis.
Superfly is like one of my favorite soundtracks of all time.
Yeah, I was playing Love Sweet Sensation, and like I got it was when it still openly showed how many thumbs downs you got on the video. I got like more thumbs downs on that video than like so many other ones that I did around that time. And I was like, man, people are assholes.
Fuck yeah.
That's funny.
I don't know if it's directly because of like straight up racism or just like dumb metal elite.
I think it's just like gatekeeper people that are like, yeah, if it doesn't slam, I'm not listening to it or whatever.
I don't know. It was really fucking whack.
Curtis Mayfield fucking slams though, dude.
He does. But like, you know, oh, yeah. Not everybody's going to agree with that statement.
Damn racist.
But before we get going here, do you have anything that you want to add, get off your chest, anything like that?
No, not really. I mean, thanks for the podcast interview, the podcast discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun getting to sit and talk with you. Like, we like talking to other musically minded, obsessive people like yourself and ourselves.
Yeah, it's awesome. I appreciate this. I've been a big fan of podcasts for a long time, and not just music ones, you know, mostly music ones, but there's been times in my life where it's taken up more of my listening diet, just like jamming to podcasts than music. Not right now, not so much, but so this is definitely was an awesome opportunity. I really appreciate it. Lots to come on the channel, have a bunch of different ideas in the pipeline, a lot more to talk about. It's been a bit of an arc of like talking about hardcore, which has been really nice. A lot of people have been paying attention. As I mentioned, the next handful are going to be more about death metal. I've got one planned for newer death metal releases past couple of years that I'm super stoked on. And then another one of like unearthed gems and weird 90s discographies and demo compilations and bands from like Poland and Russia and stuff like that to talk about. And then I don't know. We'll see. And at some point I might branch out of talking about music and get into a few other topics, but I haven't really fleshed that out yet, how I'm going to approach or what I'm going to talk about. So that's what's going on. Distro is still up there. Got my releases. Come check out some obscure Syracuse hardcore and metallic hardcore, 3 releases.
Yeah. Bye. I'll have links to that in the episode description, links to your YouTube channel, to your Instagram, everything.
And that's about it. Shout out to Paris and Tanner. Glad to see them get wed earlier this or last year in Salem. That's about it.
Cool. Well, we appreciate it, man. Thanks again.
Thanks for taking a chance on doing a podcast with us.
No, I'm honored. Thank you so much. I'll be listening from here on out, checking out your new episodes.
Right, appreciate it, dude.
We put new stuff out every Monday. So
killer. It's a good way to start my week.
All right, man. You enjoy the rest of your night, and we'll talk with you soon.
All right. Take care.
Bye.